kind of language and the tone and everything.
There were two entirely separate
views of
society. The Eastern and the Western.
How would you characterize the Western?
I would say more
indigenous
than American.
You mean pure immigrants?
No, not necessarily. A very large part of the social community in the Midwest and Wisconsin, Illinois, Missouri, St. Louis, were just They were people who left. Artisans and small businessmen, in some cases large businessmen, who came to the United States to find what they couldn't find in Germany, which was political and social freedom.
Yeah.
So it's simply that they had gone farther instead of staying in New York, where they became more or less, shall I say, ingrown.
Yeah.
They moved to the Middle West, particularly Milwaukee.
That's where I'm from.
Yeah. Well, then you know that it's probably the only large city administration that has ever existed practically without corruption was
They had one for, you know, on and off ever since. You know, they had one when I was a kid. Can't remember his name now.
I don't think it really mattered. I think they had a succession. But when I was young, in my early 20s, my late teens and early 20s, I don't even remember what his name was. He had been mayor for years and apparently intended to be more until...
Was it Sadell?
You'll find, I'm sure, his name in the list.
Yeah.
But in any event, there were a good many socialists in Milwaukee and in St. Louis, and also in Chicago.
Well, the Socialist Party in Chicago seems to have been sort of different from the one in Milwaukee, and the stuff that I've read to have been more...
I don't know too much about
left
Chicago
or something,
Socialist
yeah.
Party, about the St. Louis Socialist Party, and about the New York Socialist Party, more or less, mainly from having come here with my mother and hearing my own.
What did they say?
Well, I remember one thing that came up after Debs had been in prison, and he finally, but not recently, except the pardon, but he was
released. Yeah.
When he finally was released, it was very sick, which he knew. At this time, there was, of course, representing the Socialist Party, and they had nominated him because, of course, they couldn't nominate anyone else. And my mother was trying to talk him out of running. He felt he was elderly, he was sick. He had given practically his whole life to the Liberal and the Socialist Party. It was time for him to sit back on his laurels and have a little peace and comfort with his wife before he died. It's simple as that. And she said, besides that, they knew that New York outfit was just using you anyway. He said, no, they're not using me. I'm using me. Yeah, that was a wonderful philosophy. He said, they just think they're using me. I know I'm using them. They may be using me as they think for their ambition, but I'm using them for what I believe in, because I think that this is anything.
Did your mother have run into the New York Socialists like of that kind? Or?
Well, she was always on good terms with them. She was a very gracious, compactful, and quite shrewd woman. But she always felt that that the New York group had an entirely different attitude, different objectives.
What were they? I mean, what was it a different?
I would say they were much more left of center. The Western group tended to be Fabian socialists, socialists in St. Louis, for example, were all for peaceful change. I mean, none of the screaming and yelling and carrying on.
That's mad.
We got stopped up so much. Changing altitude. I would say that the Eastern group was much more radical and much more inclined to take violent action.
Really? Because it's people like Hilk that never seem that way when you read about them more.
Well,
sort of like a machine politician type.
My mother had no respect for him.
Well, he really seems like a creepy guy. Reading about it. Yeah.
I would say basically that the reason that she had no respect for him because she felt there was always politics in the group, Christian said. But I think she felt that the politics were more menial.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas a person of Bibb's type had nothing to gain.
Mm-hmm.
Money meant nothing to him. Literally, actually, power meant nothing to him. It came to him inevitably.
He could have had much more than he did.
Oh, he could have had much more than he did. In fact, he didn't feel that people should have that much power. Mm-hmm. He was a very simple, emotionally, a very simple, warm-hearted, genuine, and loving person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these kids talk about love and that sort of thing. They don't know about love really. He is, of course, he was a French extraction. He was the first man that I had ever seen, of course, later when I knew Europeans,
mm-hmm.
but the first man I had ever seen was a really strange man that kissed them.
Yeah, it's nice.
And it seemed utterly natural, even to me, with my basically Middle Eastern, non-European
mm-hmm.
background.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, no one could dislike him. One marvelous story that he told me when I was a teenager. He was traveling on a train to the west. Early in the morning. Oh, he knew that there was a private car picked on the back of his woman. Early in the morning, he got up and took a walk along the platform. He saw another gent also getting out and taking a walk, and they got on the same platform. They had gotten on there, and somebody else apparently also got on by the constitutional, got a little too far away from ran to the train and tried to jump on it and slept.
Mm.
The two of them were standing at the doorway and one grabbed one side and one grabbed the other side and pulled him up on the platform. The other man was J.P. Morgan. Isn't that marvelous?
That's funny. Yeah.
So
did they recognize each other?
Oh, of course they recognized. He hadn't until that time. But you know, Morgan would never be photographed in Memphis, but very much knows something wrong. He was very sensitive about it. I think it was, I don't know what it was from. It wasn't just a large nose.
It sounds like Mother Jones. I've been reading about her. She seemed always to have gone straight to the top and tried to talk to the president or J.P. Morgan or somebody else.
Well, she was quite a character.
Did you know her?
My parents knew her.
Uh-huh.
She was not one of my family friends.
You mean your mother didn't get along with her or she just wasn't around? Or?
I think she just wasn't around.
Mm-hmm.
I know Mother always... I would say this, that she didn't... I don't know whether there was any... publicly, always at least.
Mm-hmm.
She always spoke very well of her. And I never heard any criticism of her, any discussion of her that would lead me to think otherwise. So whether it was merely that they were in a different area and didn't meet too often, or whether they were maybe too primitive.
That's what I wondered about, because none of the women who were, you know, big important speakers in the socialist movement seem to have been very friendly with each other. But, Is that true?
The Fairleigh Flynn.
Yeah, was she friendly with your mother? She was younger, of course.
She was younger. Yes.
I read somewhere about her that she didn't like to speak with other women on the same platform. That might have just been a rumor.
Well, that may have been true. I think as far as Mother was concerned, actually, she was not. She was very secure.
She wouldn't have to worry.
Not about it at all. I had an extraordinary experience when I was in Chicago in the 20s. I had gone to a very fashionable dinner party. And apparently when the introductions were made, my dinner partner, who was maybe 20 years older than I, didn't catch her name.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a nickname of Pat anyway, they called me Pat. And I was a little kid. And he sat and made small talk and time, and he said, I must have been the most extraordinary. Well, I was about right here. And I hope you won't be offended when I tell you this. But he said my job was to follow this notorious woman, Kate Richards O'Hare. And I thought, oh, brother, what if you find out what my name is? So I said, did you? Yes, I was to follow her wherever she made speeches in the hope of finding something that was actionable. And he said I would get on either a following trainer or whatever possible. I made myself as scarce as possible, but of course I always did sit down where I could hear. And he said, she wasn't a pretty woman, but the most fascinating woman I had ever known. He said, I really had a terrific crush on her. He said, one day she looked down, and he said, of course, I was wearing a blue shirt because it was a minor scrupulous, yeah. It was just like a workman, which was ridiculous because he had the kind of face, you know, fine bone.
Yeah, pure white.
It showed. And he said, she looked down and she smiled so good humoredly, and she said, I'm so glad there are some of the blue-collar workers who have such lovely, soft, well-cared foreheads.
Was she joking? Or?
Of course. Yeah. But she knew.
And she knew it was him. She must have noticed him.
And then he said, the reason I tell you about it is because you look so extraordinary. I don't like her. And I was in a frightful dilemma.
What did you do?
I thought at this point, and do I tell him who I am, which would be very embarrassing, because he had spoken not too favorably of her political opinions. When you're speaking about, I mean, you may speak freely, and feeling is pretty high then. I thought, well, after all, I'm in someone's house. I just let it pass, but I let them in on neutral ground, so to speak, and I said, oh, please, you know my last name was over here. He said, well, I don't agree with your mother, but I think she's a nice woman. But you were talking about the differences between the Eastern and the Western. I think basically probably the Midwest, but it was a matter of pleasure and industrialization. With the guy who basically would be in the factories. Where I am in the South, in the coal mining district, and in the West, in the Wallace, it would be the other.
Yeah. Did people who were living in St. Louis think of themselves then as part of the South or part of the Midwest?
No, we didn't think. St. Louis did not think of itself as being part of the South. It didn't think of itself as being part of the... It didn't think of itself as being part of the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
It thought of itself as St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. Gateway to the West. They have a big gate there now, I think.
Yes. The whole ambience of the city is very different than other similar cities. I think, for example, that it was a much more liberal city.
Uh-huh.
And the reason that it was a much more liberal city is because there was the old French influence, then there was this tremendous influx of these good, straight-thinking, conscientious, hard-working, and sometimes highly ignorant Germans, who still had broken away from the background.
Mm-hmm.
So that while we were in St. Louis, by and large, during the war, when things were so very, very bad indeed, there wasn't the resentment that I found elsewhere.
You mean people didn't...
Even people, if people weren't socialists, they still, it was a smaller community.
And your kids didn't get a lot of trouble from other kids? Or?
In a way, I think I got it more than others did because I was in St. Louis. But by and large...
Where were you?
Well, I went to boarding school and I came to New York. And also I was much more precocious, I think. We did, but really, it could have been much worse. Even people who were not socialists, who had been our neighbors and knew us. There wasn't a feeling suddenly, as there was in so many places with the beginning of the war, that unless you came with a bandwagon and we're all for it. Going over and killing all the dirty, rotten Germans and so forth. I mean, it would be awful when it always happened in England. I think they were much more sane.
Yeah, well, that might have had something to do with the number of Germans there, too.
I think it did.
Yeah, that was true in Milwaukee, too.
I think it did, because after all, you can tell second generation or even third generation German Americans what Germans are like because they know what they're like. They knew what was wrong with Germany, but they disassociated that.
Sure. Did you have any contact with the Women's Trade Union League in St. Louis, or did your mother?
My mother did.
Do you know anything about it?
I don't know anything about the union. The trade union may have been entity.
No, and just in St. Louis, I met the women there, because I've been reading about them.
You mean the early ones?
Yeah. I just wondered if they had any contact with the radical movement.
I'm sure they did.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would say, probably, that there had to be a certain leaven of radicals in the league.
Yeah.
You'll know the idea, which grew up in Europe, wouldn't quite work here, so you would have a certain leaven of radicals. You know who my mother was tremendously fond of, which you probably know if you've been with her.
Oh, yeah, right, being next door to her for so long.
I liked Emma, too.
What was she like?
I had great respect for Emma.
She seems to have been very vital and warm. And
I felt that she was an intellectually a very honest person. She didn't have this, which, of course, I could never be. And she was a tremendously sincere and honest person. And when she went abroad to Russia, it had been the dream of her existence. And when she was so thoroughly disillusioned, anyone but Emma would have come back and said nothing.
Yeah.
It would have been too embarrassing.
A lot of people did come back and say nothing.
Many did. Emma. Emma spoke her mind. She said, next to anarchy, well, of course, she was a philosophic anarchy. She thought people would quit. Didn't need a horse, which I don't appreciate. But she did think the next question was to anarchy would be communism. And she found that it was infinitely worse than what we had. So she came back and spoke her mind.
She got a lot of trouble for it too, I guess. From her friends and stuff. Or her
yes, but Emma would.
Yeah.
And there were many of them, I think, who felt the way we did about her. We were extremely proud of Emma. She was straightforward, she was emotional, she wasn't sloppy, but there was a great heart in that woman.
Were you friendly with her before she went to jail? Just after your mother met her in jail?
They were in prison together.
Yeah.
Emma came to St. Louis immediately when she got out of prison.
Did she get out first before your mother? Or
she got out after she did. She must have. Because by that time we had a larger house. And Emma stayed with us. And then later when I came to New York, I met Emma Golden's niece before I ever met Emma.
It was Stella Ballantyne.
Stella Ballantyne. While my mother was in prison, I came to New York and stayed with the Lilienthals. And Stella called up and was awfully nice to me, awfully nice person. She lived down in the village. You know, her husband was not there.
I don't even know her husband's name. I don't even know.
Ballantyne.
George?
Yeah. He was in the Barrymore Company when they... when they made The Hunchback of Notre Dame. He was actually an actor, not really from choice. He wanted to paint. But of course he was English born and had this gorgeous English accent. And was very handsome and knew he handled himself well. So that really for an Englishman of a certain type can practically set on the American stage and make a living.
Yeah.
Which was the reason that Teddy really was on the stage. But Mr. Ballantyne was his name. It's his son who is the publisher.
Oh, Ballantyne Books.
That's right.
What is that? Is Dell still alive?
I doubt.
I think someone interviewed her, but I guess that was about 10 years ago.
Because when I was 12, I would say Stella was 15 to 20 years old.
So she would be quiet.
She had a young child. But she was not that young. You know, she wasn't a child bride or anything. So she would have to be 80. Yes, that Ballantyne is the publisher. The son of Teddy and Stella. You know, and it's terrible. Yes, I met Stella, and then when I got back to St. Louis, mother was in prison, and so was Andrew. Emma was in prison also. And then, not that we came out first, I'm quite sure she did, because we had many times moved to a larger house in London.
Mm-hmm.
But Emma came. I will say this, that I was prepared to like her,
mm-hmm.
because of liking her niece so much, who was really, it's not easy to establish a rapport with a 12-year-old child.
Yeah, we were that young, huh?
In a situation of that sort.
How come you came to New York?
I came to New York to spend the summer with the...
just for a vacation, or to get away. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just for the summer vacation.
Do they have children?
They have grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Lilienthal. David Lilienthal, I think it's the cousin of theirs.
Mm-hmm. And this is the maid at Lilienthal?
Maid at Lilienthal.
Yeah.
And they were awfully nice people, and they were also, they could have been sweeter or kinder, but they had this terrible feeling of responsibility, you know.
Mm.
As a child, from the time I was a little child, I thought nothing of traveling on the train on the dome, going around the city.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I can see their point of view. Every place I went, I had to be escorted by the chauffeur.
They had a chauffeur?
Oh, yes, they were.
Oh, you mean they were millionaire socialists or something?
I would say yes.
What did he do that he was so wealthy?
Lillian, they were a money family in general.
Oh, I see. So they just brought it over.
Maida Lillienthal was a Lillienthal. She was born Lillienthal.
I thought she was called Stern.
She married Stern, was her, Chick Stern was her first husband.
Oh, yeah, first she was
the father of her children.
Mm.
She had two sons and a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And these were Sterns.
Mm-hmm.
She and Chick were divorced.
Mm-hmm.
And then she married her first cousin.
Was it usual for women to be divorced in the socialist movement? I mean, how did people feel funny about that at all?
Well, I think it was considered rather far out.
Mm-hmm.
But Maida was in some ways very much like my mother.
Mm-hmm.
Remained extremely friendly.
Mm-hmm.
The summer that I was up in Tannersville with him, which is in Catskills, Chick used to come up every weekend.
Yeah, that's nice. So the children really still saw him.
Nobody seemed to mind. Well, she hadn't. I don't think she and Mr. Stern were divorced before the children were only 10 or 15, probably 15 years old. And there was no breach, it was not mm-hmm. an ugly divorce.
Did she divorce him to marry someone else?
I don't know.
Because
I couldn't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked him immensely. It was the time, he was a man who imported lace, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A very rich man.
Mm-hmm.
And a very nice man. Very cultivated person. They were German Jews.
Yeah.
With that background. So why the divorce was, I don't know, but it was... Well, he did not remarry him and did it. So she's probably the one who
mm-hmm.
left him.
Did your mother feel the divorce was over? I mean, did she feel anything?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think in that day, we all felt the divorce was something not to be taken lightly, and it still is.
Yeah. Well, it certainly was more unusual then, too.
It was more unusual. There were fewer divorces. And I think there must have been a very big conflict in my mother. I think she probably wanted the divorce for many, many years.
Mm.
But partly because of her whole background, perhaps because of her position, for whatever reason, she postponed it, I would say, a good 10 years.
Mm.
After the time that she really would otherwise have divorced.
It wasn't because of you kids, it was because of her fear of
I'm sure she
being disgraced.
I'm sure she told herself.
Yeah.
Mother was a wonderful woman with an infinite capacity for self-perception.
Yeah, that can be very useful in political figures, I guess.
I think, extraordinarily. So I say infinite. I am absolutely certain that my mother could convince herself, and did convince herself, and feel that she was speaking absolutely honestly and directly.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that she convinced herself that the reason that she didn't, of course, was because of the children, but I feel very certain that the reason was that it was partly a matter of, it's a failure, it's
mm-hmm.
there was a teeny disgrace, you know, admitting the fact of that. But actually, it worked out very well because both of my parents were married.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them married exactly the right person. My stepmother was not a brain,
mm-hmm.
a very warm-hearted person who actually adored my father. She worshipped him.
Mm-hmm.
And catered to him, and he had great respect for her emotional qualities. He never could take her seriously,
mm-hmm.
Mentally.
Was that what he wanted?
That, of course, that's what he wanted.
I mean, was that the cause of dissension between your parents? That
oh,
your
no,
mother was
neither one of them had met either of the people that they married.
No, that's not what I meant. What I meant was it that your mother was too smart or too forceful?
She wasn't too smart. She was, I think my father was much smarter than my mother.
Mm-hmm.
I think he had an absolutely first-class brain.
Mm-hmm.
My mother had a very good second-class brain. I mean, it's when I say that of my father, I say it for this reason. He was a brilliant mathematician, which I think is one of the criteria
mm-hmm.
for a person who's brilliant. In addition to that, he had tremendous imagination. My mother never would have reached the peak of eminence that she did without my father.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the stage managers.
You mean he would arrange all the trips before him?
Not only arrange the trips, edit her speeches.
Oh, really?
Oh, certainly. Because mother could be very indiscreet. Sometimes wild. But he always, he was a splendid editor.
Mm-hmm.
He invented the first bookkeeping machine. This is the company of fate. You know
mm-hmm.
what an NCR machine is, please?
Mm-hmm, sure.
You know that he actually produced a working money.
Oh, he never got any support, I'm sure.
Well, that was when the marriage, that was when they were being divorced.
Uh-huh.
And one of the finest patent attorneys in the country had invested $15,000 or $20,000 in the working money and the
mm-hmm.
and getting all the papers ready, and my father just simply waited beyond the time.
Oh.
Now, this is a creative bracket.
Yeah.
There had been adding machines before, these were not new, but a machine which could, had a memory,
mm-hmm.
which could subtract, track, and which could multiply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty hard to do.
But I think the thing basically with my parents was, I think my father loved her to the last day of his life.
Mm-hmm.
He adored her. She was a very, very difficult woman.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
You mean she was temperamental?
Well, it wasn't that heavy. She'd been temperamental, that would have been easier to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
She was tremendously proud.
Mm-hmm.
She brooked no criticism.
Oh.
And further than that, I think she basically was a person who had great general warmth, but very, very particular.
Oh, that's really a great feeling, isn't it?
And I think I have always felt, and I'm sure that my two of my brothers, not there, the two of my brothers who were my three, that it was my father who loved us tremendously. It was very difficult to get along with in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was not. But that basically he had very great love for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that my mother actually didn't have that much. That we were very secondary in personal
things. Mm-hmm.
She was, I always felt that she liked children, she liked animals, she enjoyed them.
You mean they were like toys?
That's right. But actually, to make the sacrifices
mm-hmm.
that sometimes a mother is called on to make, she was not prepared to do it. I know my father took to talk to me after I was grown. He was never jealous of her, he admired her, he did everything he could to build her up, but he did say this. He felt that after she had a child, and children, that she should take a short period out of her life
mm-hmm.
until The youngest was 8 or 10 years old. But she still could write. But she occasionally could speak.
Mm-hmm.
But she devoted that time to her children because he felt that nothing, having lost his own mother,
mm-hmm.
and never having had anyone who really was a mother, he felt it was very important.
Mm-hmm.
But she, by this time, you see, had become very vulnerable.
Yeah.
Extremely popular. She used to go away for 2-3 months at a time.
She would take you with her, right?
No. Mm-hmm. She would go without us.
Uh-huh.
I went on many trips, but mm-hmm. not all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And as a small child, of course, my father's elder sister, who was really a deplorable person, poor soul, lived with us.
Mm.
You see, this put a good face on everything.
Yeah, but it didn't work.
Well, we would have been very much better off if anyone, mother had a genius for picking people,
mm-hmm.
The housekeepers, who were wonderful, people who loved this. And between the housekeeper and my father, we'd have been better off than with this horrid creature who made our life a misery and whom my mother detested.
Why did she let her come?
With my father's sister in the house.
Oh, just looked at him.
You see, not turned over to the care of servants. Actually, the servants, any one of the several that he had, would have been infinitely better. Because we were, I mean, as far as discipline was concerned, there would be cooperation. My father was a very serious father.
He loved
his children. Enjoyed them. We'd have been better off without my mother. But certainly for a mother to go away and keep going into the two mothers, wishing them for a child.
Yeah.
Particularly if, while my grandmother lived with us before my mother came, it was fun.
Yeah.
We loved her dearly. And she was good with children, but my father's grandfather's mom was no longer up to it.
Uh-huh.
So then when she left, the aunt came.
The aunt was neurotic, or?
She was a very disappointed woman. She had been one of the greatest beauties in
school. Oh.
It was really beautiful.
I had an aunt like that, too.
And, you know, the beautiful woman didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And no one was good enough for her, and she wound up a married.
So she criticized everyone all the
time? Living in the past, you know, and at the age of 45, she was still. But she was a small-minded, trivial. Her mind had never been
broken.
She was nothing like my father, nothing like my uncles. She was just, I think, one of those people who are extremely feminine, so she was petty and she was incompetent, and I mean, she was all of the things that an immature person is.
Why do you think your mother had so many children if she didn't want to really be that sort of person? Did she not know about birth control, or did she want them? Or?
In the first place, birth control wasn't effective.
Uh-huh.
And you must remember that there were twins.
Oh, right. Well, that's unpredictable.
So she had, like, I think when my parents were married, it was a real love match. My mother was very much in love with my father, and in fact, might have remained in love with him. And he had more shrewdness, because there are men who marry twins, and he was not.
He showed all his cards? Or?
I didn't think, yes.
Mm.
And she could, the time came quickly when she could just pour him
quickly
and easily. I think she had my older brother because she really wanted him. And then when I came along 2.5 years later, she said, I thought it was an extraordinary thing. I was about 15 and she had more or less made a confidant of me. It was on a trip and she said, we were talking about children. Banana oil. Nonsense. I'm 15, the boys are 13, it'd be better if you were separate. Because there was tension. Never quarreling.
Just coldness.
Unhappiness. And she said, well, yes. And then we were talking about children. She said, well, I had Dick. I really wanted Dick. Then your father wanted me to stay home. I just had no spite.
I don't understand. You mean to show him that he couldn't make her stay home even if she had another one? Wow, that's really weird.
Well,
that's a nice thing to say, I don't know.
I don't think it never dawned on her.
Mm-hmm.
This was why, for a woman who was such a terrific psychologist, in the handling of people, how she could be so absolutely blind to what she was It was not a surprise to me.
Yeah.
Actually.
My kids now.
Because I had decided by that time that my mother and I could be very good companions. We enjoyed each other. But on the other hand, that I always felt that no matter what happened to you, my father would never let me in.
Mm-hmm.
But that my mother was basically demanding that she be able to be proud of her children.
Yeah.
And so for this reason, she wanted me to have a career,
mm-hmm.
which would bring up my honor,
mm-hmm.
which I didn't want.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd had the same side of career then.
Yeah.
But I thought that it was not. Now, my father, on the other hand, wanted me to do anything that I wanted to do because he thought women were just as intelligent as Mr. Spielberg was.
Mm-hmm.
But he did say, when I got married, he said, if you do have children, please do let your husband support you.
Mm-hmm.
Don't emasculate him.
You mean don't have a job?
No, it's all right for you to have a job, but he said, at least give him the feeling that he is supporting you. You work and earn also if you want, but please let him be the head of the house,
mm-hmm.
which I think is right.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. I think that a man is a man. I think that the rift started when, out of the first flush of love,
mm-hmm.
she became immensely successful.
Mm-hmm.
And she got this admiration,
mm-hmm.
like an actress.
Yeah.
She took it. So when the beach finally came, within about, I would say, a year and a half, they were both remarried.
Who did she marry?
She married a marvelous person, Charles Cunningham.
Mm-hmm.
Both the people that they had not met while they were married, really new people.
Mm-hmm.
And the major, as I used to call him, was exactly the right person for my mother to marry. He was witty, he was brilliant, he was intellectually the most honest person that I had ever met.
Mm-hmm. Was he radical?
No. He was, well, let's put it this way, he was a realist.
Mm-hmm.
He was a very honest person. He was not a socialist. He never had been a socialist, but he was an extremely honest and liberal person.
How could she marry someone who wasn't a socialist when she was so well, it's just like that was her whole activity.
They were very happy together.
Mm-hmm.
My mother had great respect for him.
Mm-hmm.
She catered to certain whims of his. He admired her. He loved her dearly. He loved all of us children on her account and was a very good mover, a double person. But nevertheless, he was a very, very proud of him,
mm-hmm.
person. But she knew that there was a certain picture.
Now go out speaking? Or
no, it's all right for her to go out speaking, but you couldn't stay out too long.
Mm-hmm.
And on several occasions when I mentioned something rather, she said, oh, no, Charles doesn't like me to do that. And I thought,
mm-hmm.
my mother. And I remember one time, of course, she had a tendency to dominate any situation.
Mm-hmm.
And when my elder brother married, she came to New York on a visit with my stepfather. And mother sort of took over Bobby's household, which was, you know,
yeah.
mother-in-law teaching all. And they were sitting at breakfast, the major, my mother and Bobby, my brother. And mother was sort of arranging their life for them. My father looked at her. I was there also. My stepfather looked at her and he said, now, this is God. And my mother was so funny. Like a little girl, she blushed. She dropped her eyes.
Yeah, it happened so late, I guess.
Well, they were married for about 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, for both of them, it was a splendid marriage,
mm-hmm.
because he had had a very unfortunate first marriage,
mm-hmm.
and was divorced when he met my mother. And of course, they met, it was starting out new, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you say marry a socialist, anyone that she had married who was in the socialist movement would have known my father.
Yeah, that would have been a problem, right?
It would have been a problem. Mm-hmm. But he was completely detached from the scene.
Mm-hmm.
But a remarkable person. inasmuch as he was born in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a case of alleged rape in the Hawaiian Islands. An officer's wife said that one of the Hawaiian Beach Boys had raped her, and he was arrested
mm-hmm.
and tried. The major had been married to one of the dual nurses
mm-hmm.
in Hawaii, and he lived there. And I said, do you think it was rape? He said, no. And he said, women who were born in the northern hemisphere, when they go to Hawaii or to any tropical climate,
mm-hmm.
are very apt to take lovers. Men mm-hmm. also. He said, I don't know why it is, whether it's a physical thing, the heat, the clinic ray, something, but the behavior is quite different. He said, in all probability, what happened was exactly the same thing happens as in the South, where there's a Negro lynch because a girl
yeah.
requires rape. But it wasn't rape. He said, I firmly believe that she was discovered.
Mm-hmm.
And she screamed rape. But he was quite detached about it. He wasn't speaking of the wife with scorn.
Mm-hmm.
He said, this is the way things are.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that, of course, that instinct of self-preservation to save the reputation. And as far as blacks were concerned, Negroes, he had very warm friendships with the Liberian consul.
Mm-hmm.
And when he went back to Virginia, he had this elderly, very conventional and petty old aunt who was older than he was. And they had driven in my stepfather's car, but they brought the Liberian consul, who was a doctor, to be with his face and his wife, back in the car.
To Virginia. I bet he didn't know what he was going to be like.
On the way to New York. And they came because they were congenial and because yeah. it was better for two couples to make a drive like that than one. So when they stopped in front of his aunt's house, my mother didn't get out. He was sitting in the front with the man. My mother was sitting in the back with the wife. And the aunt, oh God, Charles, why are you trying to call him there? And he said, shh, don't say that. You know, I had some bad business losses. I couldn't afford to come back east. I told him I was pot colored. This was... this was his sense of humor. And his feeling was that the black, but there was no inferiority there.
Mm-hmm.
That a black can be just as intelligent as white. He didn't think that it was likely that there was going to be any acceptance and marriedness or anything, mm-hmm. but he said they'd certainly been cohabitating throughout the South for hundreds of
sure.
years, and he said not that it had not always been a black woman and a white man. Exoticism, he said, but he was extremely unsouthern.
Yeah, he sounds like
extremely unsouthern.
Were there ever any black people in the Socialist Party that you knew? There seem to have been very few.
Yeah, remember.
Yeah, I guess what ones there would probably be in New York. There was one in New York called Harrison, I think, but, Hubert Harrison. The only one I ever heard of.
There was a very close cooperation between the urban league
mm-hmm.
and the Socialist Party.
What about
there
the
NAACP? There were certain individual Negroes. Mm-hmm. Whether they were socialists or not, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember there was one woman who was quite outstanding. I don't even remember what her field was. It might have been civil rights, urban league, or whatever. In any event, when Harding was president, she had an audience with him.
Mm-hmm.
To discuss the problems of the Negroes. And she was a very cultured and very diplomatic person. But she said something which he disagreed with, or she disagreed with him. And he immediately changed and said, you nigger, I didn't have to see you in the first place.
Yeah.
And she was telling us about it. She was there.
Who was that?
I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
She was not someone that I knew. I met her perhaps once.
Mm-hmm.
And, she was rather amused by it.
Mm. That's what she would expect it. Mm.
She more or less expected it. She said, we've got a long way to go.
Mm.
But I would say there were few, if any, Negroes in the Socialist Party. I'm not even sure they did particularly in the Socialist Party.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt it. Not necessarily because they were Negro, but because what would they be, generally speaking, as speaking, industrial workers and political. They really had no political clout at all.
Mm-hmm.
Until recent times, the Negroes were able to work through their churches. Their church was their leading place in the political
organizations. Mm-hmm. Still, I mean, they wouldn't. I mean, the immigrants that came into the Socialist Party didn't have that much political clout either.
Yes, that's true.
Hmm.
But it's a very different thing.
Sure.
To be an immigrant and to be a black person. And slavery was pretty recent.
Yeah.
The Socialist Party started being really active at the turn of the century, and the Civil War ended in 65, so it was only a matter of 55 years. I would say that at that time there were very, very few educated blacks.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly they had no opportunity to have any political or profession at all.
There weren't that many in the North. Either.
And there weren't that many in the North, yeah. Yes.
I was wondering about the position of women in the Socialist Party. Do you remember? I mean, your mother was obviously exceptional.
And there were a lot of others, too.
Who were that?
Mailey was, for example. Uh-huh. That's one name I called
him. I mean, more in terms of, like, ordinary women in the local.
Oh, no, they were there.